Blog Talk Radio. Hello, this is Debbie Guy-Giesch of the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to Revenue Marketer Radio. You guys know the drill by now. About twice a month we meet, and we talk to real revenue marketers, and we learn their tips and tricks on how to make that transition from being completely traditional to really all about revenue marketing. And it's more than just listening. This is an interactive show, so please feel free to call in or chat. And we'd be more than happy to include you in the dialogue. So we are open for calls now. And before we get into the show and our guest today, I do want to take a moment just to remind everybody, what is a revenue marketer? And a revenue marketer or revenue marketing is the process of transforming marketing from being a cost center to a revenue center. And almost every B2B marketer, at least the ones that I meet, they're all feeling the pressure to be accountable for revenue or some type of financial metric. And revenue marketing is that discipline that achieves financial accountability for marketers. And every revenue marketer that we have on this show is on the journey. And they're here to share what works, what doesn't work, which to me is sometimes a lot more interesting, and to share their gotchas and those hidden roadblocks on their journey. Now, today I'm so excited to introduce Gary Diassi. And let me tell you a little bit about Gary and his company, and then we'll get him on the show so we can really hear what Gary has to say. But Gary is on a team at Smart Bear Software who has won Marketo's Most Dramatic Business Impact Award in 2013 and Most Creative Integrated Marketing Campaign in 2014. And Gary is a dyed-in-the-wool revenue marketer. And when you hear his story around the kind of contribution that marketing makes to pipeline and to closed business, I think you're going to be just blown away. Gary, welcome to the show.
Debbie, how are you? Thank you so much.
It's such a pleasure to have you on the show. Now, I'm trying to remember. I think Gary and I met, we met at a conference. And, you know, part of what I do is I always love to hear marketers' stories, what it is that they're doing. And when we began to chat at the conference, I was completely blown away around what he and his team have been able to do. So, Gary, why don't we start by telling us a little bit about your role in the company and what you're accountable for?
Sure, absolutely. And again, thanks for having me on, Debbie. I just wanted to say this really cool thing that you guys are doing. I think it's a cool program, and I'm looking forward to being your new biggest fan in some of your upcoming programs coming up.
Well, thank you. Well, we have cool marketers on. That's what makes the show cool, people like you, Gary.
A little bit about my role at Smart Bear. I kind of have two mutually exclusive roles right now. So one being I manage the inbound digital marketing team, which includes everything from organic content, SEO, email and lead nurturing, social, the blog, advertising and PPC, campaign execution, our customer advocacy program, webinars, video, and physical events. And really our responsibilities there are driving qualified traffic and demand for all SmartBear products. We have about a little over 12 products at SmartBear. Also increasing conversion throughout the buyer's journey and ultimately, while in the process, increasing ROI on all of our marketing initiatives and programs. And we're ultimately golden revenue, which I think is really important for us always keeping an eye on the bottom line. My other sort of separate role here at SmartBear is managing the corporate marketing and the brand. And in a nutshell, that role is pretty much making sure everyone knows who SmartBear is and loves SmartBear.
Well, then as a corporate brand marketer, you have to be delighted to have access to these tools and these systems, because I can't imagine trying to be the bearer of the brand without having use of Marketo and digital marketing and revenue marketing and all those kinds of things.
Absolutely. And as a you know, as a tech company, it's also important for our brand perception that we are sophisticated in everything we're doing to the experience on the website. We need to be very cutting edge.
So I know that when we had talked before, I was completely blown away by the kinds of metrics that you track and that you report on. And when you say your goal on revenue as a marketing organization, you really mean it. So maybe you could share mm-hmm. with us the kinds of metrics that you're accountable for and what kinds of numbers you guys are driving.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So we're a very high volume, high velocity B2B model. We have four core markets that we market to. At SmartBear, like I said, a little over 12 products, and our marketing team is around 27 of us or so now with five inside global sales teams. So a couple of fun facts, I guess, to get a sense of the volume. We had about one web session every 1.7 seconds in 2014, about 17.6 million web sessions that we drove. We sent one nurture email every 3.7 seconds in 2014, around 8.5 million nurture emails. And someone downloaded a SmartBear tool once every 15 seconds for the entire year in 2014. And that's including weekends as well, not just business hours. So, and I thought it'd be, since we're talking about inbound marketing and driving lots of traffic at the top of the funnel and also nurture and turning that into revenue at the bottom, I thought it would be interesting. I have some numbers here to share with you today. Starting at the top of the funnel, we'll work our way down. So like I said, around 17.6 million web sessions we drove in 2014. A big part of our top of the funnel strategy is open source downloads as well, which we later convert to our pro products. So about we're averaging right around 500,000 open source downloads a quarter, upwards of 2 million in a year. We had around 70,000 content downloads last year, which is things like ebooks, webinars, things of that nature, gated assets. And last year, averaging around 45,000 or so free trials of our products. We're a free-to-pro trial model. Now that's up to around 50,000 or so. And 95% of those free trials that we're driving are through inbound organic traffic.
Oh, that is really interesting. Okay.
And moving further down the funnel, right, so for us, a trial download and a trial activation are two very separate things, right? Just downloading the product, or people actually using the product. So we're measuring that through integrations with Marketo and our products. So our average trial activation rate, it differs by product, but 30 to 60% or so, which we're always working on increasing. Last year, we sent a little over 200,000 qualified leads to our sales teams. And interesting, I have an interesting stat here, is of those 200,000 qualified leads we delivered to sales last year, right around 10% of them were leads that we had recycled through nurture that we had generated in 2013 or before. So that means that through our nurturing programs, 10%, 20,000 leads we were bringing back from 1, 2, 3, 4, even 5 years ago, we're still getting an ROI on leads we generated a few years ago. And I thought that was an interesting stat as well. So for of those that we do convert to opportunities, again, differs by product, but 10 to 30% trial to opportunity conversion. And marketing contribution to revenue is over 80% for new business.
That's the stat. I mean, I loved all these stats. Number one, it shows that you run your business based on data and based on numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to make mm-hmm. sure that our listening audience really heard that last stat, and that is marketing contributes to revenue over 80% of the new business. So that means that of all the new business that comes in, of the revenue from new business, 80% of that is from marketing qualified leads that were sent over.
Yep, that's right.
That's absolutely amazing. And so what kind of year-over-year growth are you guys experiencing in revenue?
Double digit.
Very nice.
Yep,
very nice.
Going very quickly. So, yeah. So we're up to about 3 million active users worldwide and 25,000 enterprise customers.
So I know that anybody listening to these numbers, Gary, are going to say, how in the world did you get to 80% contribution of net new revenue? How did that happen? Did somebody like wave a magic wand one day? I mean, if you were to kind of talk about the journey, because everybody would be, they'd give the right arm to have that kind of revenue contribution to the company. So kind of, can you take us through that journey, what that was like?
Yeah, sure. So I started at the company in late 2012, actually. This is my third role at SmartBear since coming here, and actually that speaks a lot to the growth of the company in itself, with lots of opportunity for growing into different roles internally. So SmartBear was we're an acquisition model, so a number of different companies that came together, and basically over the years we really filled out our offering to cover the entire application lifecycle. So we have really full coverage for our audience: software developers, testers, operations people. We have 12 products that really have everything that you need to ensure end-to-end quality for software. So our company came together, and at that time we sort of switched to more of an inbound-driven model, more of a modern marketing model, if you will. And started from there.
Whose idea was that? Did somebody just wake up one day and say, wow, we're missing the boat on inbound? I mean, how did that happen?
So in 2012, actually, Gene Hopkins, who's our former CMO, who's an awesome CMO, she came to SmartBear, actually, and SmartBear consciously was bringing her in to make that transition at the company. And Gene, along with Casey Lincoln, Prashant Kal, I was one of the first, I think, five team members hired on that team, and we started rebuilding from scratch. And now our current CMO, Brian Semple, also a fantastic CMO, has, we've sort of carried the torch and built the team from there.
So when you take a look at 2012, before having a focus on inbound, what kind of contribution did marketing have to revenue?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question off the top of my head.
Okay.
But I can assure you that our nurture program was even in worse shape at the time. So we were getting some of our products that did have a pretty strong inbound presence, not where it is today, obviously, but we were driving some considerable inbound leads, but this is not to the blame of anybody here at the time, right? We had a team of like four or five people trying to do what 27 are doing now, right? So, but the nurture program was nearly non-existent. So we're really just losing tons of resources and money by generating all these leads and just not getting an ROI because we weren't following it through all the way to close one with customer.
Now, Gary, what year did you guys buy Marketo?
We signed on with Marketo in 2011. And I was actually originally hired to run marketing operations, marketing automation, lead nurturing, and work on fixing that nurture problem and turning more of our inbound leads into business. And so we started really ramping up our nurture programs in late 2012.
Okay. So clearly what you guys have been able to accomplish in the last few years is really to make a very, very strong connection between what you're doing in inbound and what you're doing with outbound. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what that looks like?
Sure, absolutely. So to me, inbound and customer nurture are sort of like the yin and yang, the two dominant forces of modern digital marketing. And explaining the why a little bit quickly here as I get into the how, really if you boil it down, inbound is the huge force driving all of our traffic and filling the leads at the top of the funnel, and then our nurture is what's squeezing out the revenue and converting them throughout the buyer's journey through the bottom. And because I use the yin and yang analogy, because it should be balanced. They're equally important. So if you have a really good inbound team and your nurture's kind of weak, you're throwing resources out the window like we were. And vice versa, if you're very strong in nurture and pretty weak and inbound, it's kind of like being all dressed up with nowhere to go, if you know what I mean. You don't really, that's also not worth the investment. So for us, we were able to, build strength in both over time, and really the transition to happens at the point of the conversion, the first when the lead is generated. And for us, it's been about the data that we're able to capture through that conversion. So once we've converted a lead through inbound, we capture that data, and we've written all these programs in Marketo that can figure out what product this person's interested in, and based upon the conversion type, what stage of the funnel we should be nurturing them. So, and then it places them in the appropriate stream. And so, for example, if it's a very top of the funnel piece of content that the person is downloading, entering, they are definitely not ready to talk to sales, and they're definitely not ready to get salesy content. So we're going to place them in more of a top of the funnel content stream to nurture them down funnel on that product, and we're, of course, lead scoring them at the same time, nurturing them towards a trial until they're ready. Versus all the leads that we drive straight to trials, very, very different trial experience. There we're trying to nurture them and make sure they're realizing the full value of the product.
So one of the things that I love about, Gary, about what you're doing is, because I want to make sure we get this point in as well, is that you had, I think you said, like 70,000 content downloads in 2014. And clearly connecting your inbound and your outbound and setting up these long-term nurture streams requires a whole lot of content. So maybe
especially when you have 12 products.
Exactly. So how do you create all that content? I mean, because that's a lot of content, and this is something that a lot of companies struggle with, is they do have a lot of content, but they don't have content that's specific to nurture campaigns. So how did you guys overcome that challenge?
Sure. So there's a number of things. We have to be very smart about repurposing. We have to keep our ears really close to our audience and really understand what they're really interested in. And we have to be a lot smarter with planning our content and producing our content, because we need to make sure, to your point, we're generating lots of it, and there's a huge demand for content. So we need to make sure that all the content we're creating is going to pack the biggest punch possible. When we are creating new content, we're making sure to repurpose it as much as we possibly can. A webinar turns into a transcription, which turns into an ebook and a web page and blog posts and videos. So we're very planful about it, and we have to be very calculated with our content.
And so
we've of course built a team that to support it.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. The content team is in your group, so they know exactly what to create and how to create for the nurture streams that you guys are doing.
Right, and we have a pretty interesting organization, our org structure. We're organized both functionally and by market vertical. So depending on your team, so my team is functionally, and then we work across all the products, and then we have the web team, the design team, the operations team. These guys work all across the products. But then we also have one demand generation expert and one product marketing manager for every one of our four key markets, and those guys focus vertically in their area of expertise. So, and that it's really interesting, because that allows them to really understand the customer, which is so important, so they can dive down and really focus. And that dynamic between the market manager, demand generation person, and the product market manager is critical. And the product market manager adds a huge dynamic as well, because they're the person who understands the domain, they understand the audience, the positioning, messaging. And so that is really important in our space, to be able to connect the dots with a very, very technical audience. So these guys are out and very involved in what's going on in our communities with our audience, and that's where we really get our understand what content we need, what topics we need to be talking about, and what are the real values that our customers are getting.
I love the collaboration that I hear between different roles and responsibilities across different areas of marketing. I think that's something that actually a lot of revenue marketers struggle with, especially in the larger organizations. You know, how would you say that you guys have achieved that level of collaboration?
Sure. So it's, our culture is one of the biggest things. We work in a very open and very collaborative working environment, and that sort of sets the tone from day one. People is really the most important thing for us. The team, if you start with a small, really good team, you're much more likely to end up with a larger, really good team. Because when people come in to interview, right, they're going to be walking out saying, "Oh, I can't wait to work with those guys. I got to work with those guys." Right. So we are a very close-knit team. And it's really important to us that you're a cultural fit. So we have a great interview process when we're looking for, we're always looking for the top talent. It's very competitive, and our culture and our work environment, work in our favor in that way for sure. But we have hard skills and soft skills we're looking for in interviews. But even if you check the boxes on the hard and soft skills, if you're not a cultural fit, it's not going to work out. So we're very close.
Yeah, I love your culture. I mean, this sounds like Nicholas Draka, who heads global marketing ops for LinkedIn, talks about the same type of cultural fit. And you can tell, you can hear the passion in your voice when you begin to talk about that culture. So I could see where that certainly would help with collaboration. So wanted to ask.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say
it's the way the team set up, too, is pretty interesting, the way we have to balance generalists and specialists, because for on my team, for example, we need to have, a balance of specialists for inbound and for nurture, because with our level of sophistication and complexity, you can't have someone, for example, running nurture and be, I kind of know Marketo. This person needs to know what they're doing, and same for inbound. So we have specialists that we're hiring that focus, and they're marketing 12 different products, right? So they have tons on their plate, so they have to focus in there. But in the same time, we balance that with a lot of generalists. So our demand generation experts, our market managers, they need to really have a good understanding of all the different areas, because they're, at the end of the day, responsible for delivering everything that happens in their market. So they and I have the full view from inbound across through nurture for the entire process.
And I love that you have tackled the structure issue that way, by having both specialist and also having the generalist, because I agree with you. There's too much for any one person to absorb. And so having a team of people that collaborate and that are both specialist and generalist, completely agree with Gary. I see that in the most successful companies. When you're talking about your team, the other thing I wanted to ask you about is, clearly, you guys are highly skilled and very, very good at what you do. How did you find those skills, or did you train those skills?
That's a very good question. It's a combination of both. It's a combination of both, really. So for the specialists, right, people, when we're looking for new specialists, we really have to go out and find that top talent. And again, we know that people on our team are the number one most important key to our success. So we're out, marketing is very involved in HR recruiting and supporting them with everything we can do to bring in top talent in the area. But we also, a lot of it is training. It's a lot of cross training. A lot of new hires coming out of school as well. And it's very much the sort of environment where we try to let people float back and forth between specialist and generalist, and expose everyone to as many different skills in the group. They have the opportunity to transition back and forth if they want to focus on becoming more of a generalist. If they were a specialist, great, that happens all the time, and vice versa. But we're very training oriented. Education is very important to all of this, so that the more, and I would recommend for any marketers out there, whether it's for yourself or for your team, for inbound, and the more that you can cross train and understand both sides of the fence, I think the more successful that you'll be in understanding the whole process.
I agree.
Because people tend to migrate to one side or the other, Mm-hmm. I see that a lot. Mm-hmm. So the more that you can sort of cross-pollinate, the better.
So you've got this structure that works. You've got a team of people that have the right skills that work. But you also do something, Gary, that you call agile marketing. What is that, and why do you guys do it?
Sure. So agile is a model adopted from agile development, software developers. It's a methodology, and basically we use it for project planning, project management, execution, and prioritization. So the way it works is basically we run a sprint system, and it's a two-week sprint. And every task, every initiative that we're going to be working on goes into the sprint. If it's not in the sprint, it doesn't exist. And we're reviewing everything on our plate, making sure we don't have too much on our plate. We understand what we can commit to and what we can't. And we're making sure that we're focusing on the right things. And once we commit, that's what we're doing for the next couple of weeks. We're focusing there. And then at the end of the sprint, we run our retrospectives to see how we do and talk about how we can improve next time. And it really allows us to be... It gives us faster reaction time, so we can react quickly. We have a very fast-paced environment, so we need to plan ahead and make sure that our team is – we plan for the unpredictable, right? That's inevitably always going to happen. You can't plan everything. Something's going on in the industry. We need to react quickly. So we're planful of that. It helps us balance our workload. Again, huge for prioritization, visibility. Any single person on our team can see what somebody else is working on at any given time, from the interns up to the CMO. And also, it just really helps us be more efficient. And again, it supports our collaboration. It's one environment in which literally everything is going on. And for a global team, it's especially important as well.
So how do you create that shared view? I mean, is there like, do you guys have like a intranet site or something that you've put together where people can go see what all the items are in the sprint and who's responsible for what?
Yeah, well, we use Atlassian Jira is the tool that we use for this. We've used several of them over the years. We really like Jira. And so it's a cloud environment. So you can log in from anywhere in the world. We're a global business, so that's very important. And everything goes into Jira.
Oh, and it makes things so easy. And again, when you told me about what you guys were doing, and I have worked with a few other firms that do, or they think they do, Agile. They really kind of don't. I just love your approach to it because, again, you're running marketing as a business, and your business is to contribute to the pipeline. So I just love the way you make it transparent and you make it visible and you make it organized. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, transparency is one of our cultural values here. And one of the biggest things I can say about Agile is that you have to make it work for your business. Right. Something that you're always improving it with every sprint. It's a collaborative thing. We all share ideas on how we can improve next sprint. And you really have to mold it to fit your business. You can't just put a square peg in a round hole.
Right. So one of the things that we had also talked about, because, again, being a very metrics-oriented marketing group, which, again, is the definition of a revenue marketer, you guys have something called Metrics Mondays. What is that all about, Gary?
Yes. So every Monday we get together, on a GTM from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern. And that's actually, it's interesting, it's our something that our CMO Brian Semple started. We don't get into a conference room because if our global team members can't have to dial in through GTM, then the rest of us should have to. So we all dial in on Monday mornings. We go on our webcams, and we're going over everything that happened last week in all of our different areas. Everybody owns a number, and we're really trying to – the goal is to bubble up any issues, make sure that if – you know, something went wrong, that we're going to fix it immediately this week, figure out what's working and what's not. If something's working really well, we want to double down on that this week.
What would be an example of something that wasn't working or was working and you wanted to do more of it? Give us an example.
Oh, absolutely. So you might see on a given week where a PPC, for example, is one thing that came to mind just because I came out of an AdWords meeting right before this call. You're going to see we're A-B testing things constantly, and you might see this landing page that we just created a couple weeks ago is really not doing well. Our cost per lead is going way up. We need to fix that. Or vice versa. This new page, this A/B test, this new idea that we're trying is killing it. So let's invest more this week and let's double our leads. So there's all different kinds of things that can come out of it. And again, we want to just identify the things that are working the best and the things that we need to fix immediately.
I love that. I love everybody should have Metrics Mondays, no question about it. So we're kind of getting to the end of the interview, and Gary, I could talk to you forever. I'm completely fascinated with what you have been able to accomplish there at Smart Bear. But, you know, we have a lot of listeners, a lot of people. They might dial in, or they certainly listen to it. They listen to the podcast later on. And I'm sure they would all love to hear some words of wisdom from you. So if you were going to give advice to other marketers, perhaps, you know, they're relatively new on that revenue marketing journey, what kind of advice would you give them?
Sure. So I think for a revenue marketer in 2015, one of the most important things that understand is that our jobs aren't over at the point of conversion, and in a lot of ways they're just beginning, and it can be a long customer journey, right? So there's all this data and statistics you'll see out there where 70% of the journey, the statistics will change depending on the source, but a huge amount of the journey happens online before they even get to sales, right? So we need to, in order to protect our investment and all this money and all this energy and resources we're putting into creating a great inbound program, we need to follow through all the way through the end. And that doesn't even stop at the point of winning the customer, because then the customer, upsell, cross-sell, the lifetime, we need to make sure that we're growing our customer relationships. So it's not over at the point of conversion. We need to continue through that. And also one thing that I learned actually pretty on in my career that I think is important when talking about both nurture and inbound is the idea of driving quality traffic. Fueling your nurture engine needs quality fuel in order to run. And so you can't if you come out with an ebook like the 49 Secrets to Falling in Love, Winning the Lotto, and Living and Dying a Happy Life, right? You might drive tons of traffic at the top of the funnel, but that doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to end up buying application performance money, right? You can't leave it totally up to your nurture engine if you're putting kind of crap in your engine. And if you're focusing on that driving traffic that's not qualified, right, you're not really thinking about the bottom line. You're not thinking all the way through. Mm-hmm. Like I said, cross-training yourselves and your team, very important. The more you can understand the organic side of things, driving traffic throughout the buyer's journey and at the bottom of the converting at each stage of the funnel, I think the more successful you'll be. And one common thread of inbound and nurture is user experience. So user experience is everything in 2015. So Google, it's all about the user. It's all about when users are searching online, getting them the information that they're looking for. And that really holds true in nurture as well. So if you can think like the users, approach inbound marketing from a user's perspective and catering to their needs and do the same throughout the buyer's journey once they enter your automated nurture paths, the more successful you'll be.
I love that.
And
I think
at the end of the day,
the team is
everything. So
the team is everything.
Yeah.
So your job is not over at conversion. You really have to think about the entire life cycle of a client, because there's lots of ways to influence and create value. Don't think about traffic. Think about quality traffic. Ensure that you're cross-training, because there's so much to learn. It's all about the user. You need to think like a user to be successful. And then finally, you're right, without the right people and the right team, you just will not be successful. So, Gary, I think that is fantastic insight, and I just want to thank you so much for being on the show today. Again, I could have talked to you for like two more hours and to learn more about everything that you guys are doing and how you're so successful. So I really thank you so much for being on the show with us today.
Yeah, Debbie, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've really enjoyed chatting with you as well, and thanks again for having me on.
You're so welcome. And everybody, please remember, you can download all these interviews from iTunes or you can go to Revenue Marketer Radio and you can listen through your computer. So thanks to everybody for joining us today, and I hope you have a great revenue marketing day. See you next time.